What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Hello. Welcome back, Sherlyn. This week, we are getting ready for WWDC 2024.
Yeah.
It's happening in a couple of days. Sherlyn and I are going to be going down there to do it just like we did last year. But I don't know. Maybe not as momentous as last year's WWDC, yeah, where we got a whole new device, right? And a whole new platform for Apple. But we're expecting a lot of AI stuff. We'll dive into all of that. And we got a bunch of news this week, too. But as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. And I'm sure you guys will have a lot of questions after this episode, so be sure to do that. And also, you can typically join us Thursday mornings on our YouTube channel for our live stream around 10:30 a.m. Eastern. It's a fun time. Join the crowd, and you can see us on video and see us do very silly things, because we'll be doing some demos, too, which may not show up as well in the audio version of the show. Stay tuned to the end of this episode for my chat with Justin Samuels. He's the founder and CEO of Render ATL, which is a huge tech conference happening in Atlanta from June 12th to 14th. All right, let's talk about WWDC. Sherlyn, I feel like we are dead with events because we have come through Google and Microsoft and everything just kind of back to back. And of course, we knew WWDC was coming, but Apple only sent us invites like maybe a week ago. It's typically like a 2-week lead time that we get to actually jump into it. How are you feeling? What are you looking forward to at DubDub?
I mean, I like going to DubDub. I like visiting Apple's campus. It's one of the nicest I've been to. I mean, all three that I've been to are nice, right? Google, Microsoft, and Apple. But something about Apple's campus just really resonates in my, you know, chestal region.
I mean, it's very, it is the nicest one. I haven't been to the main Google campus. And also, you didn't see the new Microsoft campus.
Oh, yeah.
Which we saw it build. And they, you know, these companies, they express their style in their campuses, in their environments, right?
Yes. But as for the actual news we're expecting out of WWDC, I don't know how hype I might be yet. I mean, we'll dig into kind of what we're expecting, but it just sounds like from all the reporting and rumors and leaks and whatnot, AI is going to be a big deal. And I'm just like, oh, God. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I always...
We're so
inundated.
We're done with it.
With all of
it. Well, also because... That's what I.O. was about. Like, was Google saying, like, hey, this is how we're AI everything.
And Microsoft
was also like, yeah, here's a whole new AI platform for all PCs. So,
and
does the dream of AI stuff feel more real this year, at least for you, Sherlyn? Because last year it didn't feel real.
I don't know about more real, right? Like, I don't know if I... What do we mean by real? But I will say that Google's been banging on about AI forever, and Google has had like, and also the word AI itself like has been around for so long, decades, right? And what are we really talking about this year is that generative AI is making its way into a lot of devices and whatnot. With Google, it still felt a little bit like a mix of what we saw with the Duplex announcement years ago with the restaurant reservation AI slash whatever you would want to call that. But Apple actually coming out and using and uttering the word AI would be a big deal, I think. I don't think Apple would say it as many times as Microsoft or Google did in their respective developer conference keynotes. But if they say it at all, I would be like, wow, this is entering mainstream consciousness. I would bet a table that Apple finds a way to rename it or say it in some way that's not the same as everyone else. But it's also very classic Apple to enter the game extremely late, but maybe make the most waves, even if nothing they do is groundbreaking, you know?
We kind of talked about that around the Vision Pro, right? Like, that was definitely almost a decade late after all the VR headsets came out and Apple like sat back and looked at AR and VR and everything. But I don't know if we can say that here, because based on the reporting we've seen, and by the way, we have a great preview piece by Chris Holtz, so go check that out for like all our stuff. We are expecting Apple to AI all the things, but the inner story here is almost one of failure by Apple. There was a report in the Wall Street Journal last night kind of detailing what went down here, and specifically, it was that Apple just didn't really seem to have focus around AI stuff. They in 2018, they had hired a former Google engineer, John Gianandrea, to kind of head all of their AI stuff. And according to that reporting, That team, which also included more Google people that he brought into Apple, never quite gelled with the rest of Apple, right? Because Google's like timeline, the way they develop things, may take a long time. And they don't like normally have to build products around, hey, we got to release a new iPhone next year, you know, or a new iPad in a couple of years or something. So it seems like that team never fully gelled within Apple. And then most recently, like some of Apple's other executives, like when ChatGPT launched, like got really enamored with that stuff and was like, oh, crap, we got to be doing this. So this year almost seems like Apple's like proving that they are not totally behind, because the story, at least since last year, is that Apple is behind, even though you could argue that they've been doing neural engine stuff since 2017, 2018. Like they've been doing computer vision stuff, but they haven't done generative AI stuff. And that's what we're expecting to see at DubDub next week. Kind of stuff that Apple itself has been doing, because there has been reporting about an internal engine that they're working on for Siri to maybe do more things locally, but also partnerships, most likely with OpenAI, according to reporting from Mark Gurman at Bloomberg. It seems like Apple has formed a partnership with them to kind of do similar to what Microsoft is doing with OpenAI, although not to the same degree. Like Microsoft is like half invested in OpenAI at this point. But basically being able to trigger OpenAI from Siri or maybe within iOS and macOS, it seems like something like that is happening. It does feel like Apple's behind, right? They kind of have something to prove, and they don't normally... they're not normally in the weak position as a company, Sherlyn.
I mean, look, I want to point out that in the live stream video chat, D-Bro9 said IAI, right? Are they going to add an I?
IAI.
That is quite funny. And that, you know, AI is our new reality. Apple and all, according to D-Bro9, Apple always follows, never innovates. I don't know. I don't know if we can necessarily say
that's
that.
That's absolutely not true, because
Vision
Apple
Pro is
follows.
So different. Yeah. You know,
you could argue Apple follows, but they follow with innovation that typically kind of like fixes a lot of the mistakes endemic to an industry.
Yeah,
so iPod,
usually like
iPhone,
a thoughtful implementation of something that's been trendy and hyped up for a bit. Which makes sense.
And this one seems like they're following the trend.
Right.
Way,
and this it feels a little early. I can't say, right? Like, we haven't seen what Apple is announcing. We haven't seen what Apple is exactly going to say or bring to Siri or iPhones or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it seems early for Apple to be jumping into this too. Like you said, like it's only 2 years that Gen AI has been that much of a hype term. For Apple, this is like they haven't waited 5 years before jumping in. Wow. You know, like that's kind of what I think. Yeah.
Part of the problem is that there's also been a lot of reporting. Like Google has been working at this stuff for a long time. Like I think the initial paper around the Transformer model came out of Google's own AI research work. Microsoft has been working with OpenAI for several years. Copilot launched for, what is their programming thing called? Their programming system. I keep forgetting the
Copilot
name of that.
Thing? Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yep. I'm sure somebody in chat will bring it up. But they, even Microsoft, like a company that is typically a company that's bad with timing, seems like they were right on schedule for taking advantage of this stuff. Now, I think we could still argue, like, Sherlyn, do you think Apple really needs to compete with generative AI? Because I think at this point, I'm like, what do I do with these images? I really don't want things to write for me, but maybe other people will find that more useful. Do you think this is actually a problem for Apple, or just
think,
like a marketing thing?
I don't think the like lack of jumping into Gen AI hype is the problem for Apple. I think the problem for Apple is that Siri is kind of dumb.
Yes.
You know, and it definitely could benefit from some Gen AI based like large language model learning type thing. Like that sort of thing, you know what I mean? Like it's more sophisticated assistant. Whether it be in what, you know, Siri can do, which, by the way, is a lot. Like, I gotta say, I don't have that many complaints about Siri. I think that a lot of these voice-based assistants are dumb in some way or another. Like, with my Google ones, they're, like, so bad at responding to me from the correct device, and that might be because I have so many Google devices. But also, like, Siri is good at, like, working with third-party apps. So you can more, you know, iOS has made it so that it's so much
depends.
Easier.
I kind of feel like, Amazon, like as much as we talk crap about Amazon and the trouble within their whole Alexa division, like they haven't been able to make money off of that. But that whole the Amazon assistant, I think is a little more useful, because they did better about integrating with third parties before Apple and before Google did. So hey, I have one of those devices like almost the Echoes, in my home.
And those are so good. Yeah.
They do more. They listen better. And Siri, I could have my phone on my table. I could be like, hey, blank. Hey, nothing. Absolutely no response. I think iPhone 15 Pro Max.
I think what I am most impressed by is that, like, with the jump to iOS 17, that, like, the hot word for the assistant on iPhone is just the name now. And
it's a terrible idea.
No, it's actually terrible. Worked really well for me. I can say the name in conversation and not have my phone respond. And yet when I'm directly commanding and saying just the name, it responds very quickly too.
At times I have said words like, seriously, and my phone would be like, hey, can I help you?
What phone is it? Not to like shame
iPhone 15
you,
Pro Max. Like I got the biggest and the bestest. So there's shame here.
Interesting.
And the microphone should be good. Even while I'm like wearing AirPods or something, which have the microphones right there and should be better with Siri. I turned off the plain Siri name thing because it happened so often. It was just more frustrating to me.
Okay,
so
it worked really well for me. Blank. That's so strange. Yeah.
I don't know. But I also have to talk to a lot more people. I don't know, in my daily life.
That's true. Shout maybe I'm quieter. Yeah, I'm not like yelling at people the
you're
whole
just
time.
You're in your
at least out loud.
But I agree. Like Siri has been good for some things, and Siri was the first virtual assistant. So that was one of Steve Jobs' final products that he was working on. It was his dream of having like a thing you talk to and it helps you out. And I think that dream kind of died, especially as Alexa came out and Amazon proved that like having actually a speaker in your room that listens to the entire room is more useful and can do more things. My question for you, Sherlyn, is like, what do you want to see? Like we've seen all these AI tools. We've seen things from Microsoft like Recall, by the way, which is getting a lot of flack for being a potential security hazard. Actually, we'll talk about that later. But we've seen companies try to do Gen AI stuff. I think Microsoft with Recall and like with some of the stuff in Paint where you can like doodle and
co-creator,
type in text and do co-creator stuff. Like that's kind of cool. What do you want to see on iOS or iPadOS or macOS?
Look, I will point out that Drew in our chat was one of the first commenters this morning saying that they want macOS on iPads. And I think that that's like definitely interesting and something that we've all been hoping some sort of desktop software comes to tablets, whether on the Android or Apple side. We've been hoping for that forever. But I don't know at this point that as a user I have any requests other than obviously better understanding of dictation in messages sometimes.
Smarter Siri, yeah.
Better Siri. Which, by the way, I just said that and none of my devices responded and I thought that was smart. But the thing is, I will say this. As a reporter, as someone who's been covering the space for a while, I have different things I'm hoping to see. I want to hear that RCS announcement. I want to know more about that. I want to see what this AI announcement pans out to. And you know what? If Siri improves, it'll improve my life too, probably. Updates on maybe HomeKit? Will there be a HomePod update? I don't know.
They're going to talk about HomeKit. They're going to talk about CarPlay. But I'm specifically wondering, what do you want to see in the realm of AI? Or does it matter to you? Like, do other features matter more at this point?
I still don't use generative AI features this much, right? When I think of generative AI features, I think of things like summaries. I think of things like better transcription, maybe. And that I would love to see Recorder on the iPhone get transcripts, right? In the way that like voice messages already do in message. What else do they do? I mean, image, like clear the background and replace it with something better. That's another Gen AI feature that
they're
good.
Already doing that. Like the studio and effects stuff or the camera effects.
Right. When I contemplate the list of common AI based features that are available on competing devices, there's not a lot that I
think
want
ahead.
Or use.
I'm asking, think ahead, right? Like we know what AI can do. We know Apple loves to be like, hey, they love to yes and everybody in the tech world. Like, yes, and we do this and therefore we're better. There was a reporting from Gurman that Siri could just do anything. Basically, like it can interact with any app that you're looking at and also maybe interact with apps that are like running in the background or something. So if you're checking email, you could be like, hey, Siri, can you, build a playlist for me in Spotify doing yada, yada, yada. Maybe it could do that stuff. True multitasking, because we talked about that during the iPad Pro, right?
So I would be really interested to see that whole Rabbit with the R1 said they would have a large action model where it can use
Siri just woke up and started talking to me, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah. Because you
used
your...
And I didn't even say hey.
No, you did.
I didn't even say
hey. No, you did.
I did.
You did. Okay. I remember you said it. Yeah. Because well, I was like, I would just say Siri. But so what happens is, like, if they use that sort of implementation that Rabbit is trying to do, where, like, it's AI can actually speak on third parties on behalf of you, then that's great. I would like to see the limitations, right? Like the same thing that you encountered with the Rabbit R1, where like the third party like integration was just kind of limited. I assume that Siri's going to run into that as well.
Well, Rabbit was working off of website. So like if Uber changed its website, Rabbit would have to go back and reprogram how their like little integration with Uber worked. And apparently Uber didn't work at all for me. So I think Uber had done something that screwed them up. With iOS, at least like
Apple has power.
It's like apps. Apple has power. Apple has like more insight into how the apps run and things. And maybe developers can even put in like little hooks to be like, hey, this is how you better work with this smarter Siri or something. But to have something like that runs entirely on device, I think that would be useful. Like, I think we all just want to like talk to our computers. And that is the goal OpenAI and Google and even Microsoft is trying to push right here. So
we all just want to delegate tasks to our assistants. We don't want to do things by hand anymore. And I understand that, right? It's a vibe. I also, by the way, want to point out that I saw either a thread or a tweet or whatever it is somewhere someone went, I want AI to do my laundry and chores so that I have time to do creative stuff and art. Not AI to do my creative stuff and art so I can do my laundry and my chores. And I thought that
this
was
true.
Like, so accurate. Exactly.
That is the perfect human example, I guess. And also, like, yeah, we've been testing all this stuff. I don't have a huge use of like the generative image stuff in AI.
Exactly.
I will say... More recently, I've been looking closer and closer at like how transcription works with AI, because that's been super helpful for us. And also like just online AI tools for like podcast editing. And we'll actually do a little demo later on this episode to kind of show that off, to show like what is possible now. It is pretty wild. A lot of these AI tools can be useful, but it remains to be seen like how Apple's going to do it. What about other products, Shrulin, like iPadOS? macOS specifically.
Here's the other thing.
I'm
excited to see for no reason whatsoever.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
You know what I'm going to say, right? Let's say it together on the count of three. 1, 2, 3. Calculator.
Calculator. Everybody. Oh, you were really like hesitant there.
No.
Calculator.
I want to see this calculator. I want to see this newfangled calculator. What is it going to do? Is it going to do my taxes, okay? Calculator, do my taxes. Get me a refund. That's what I want. Give me a big refund.
You shouldn't need calculator to do that. You should need the government to destroy Intuit as a company, which has stopped us from having better tax preparation. But
different conversation. So anyway, I'm excited to see that. I think iOS 18 is probably going to bring some changes. Where, by the way, according to some of the rumors we saw in our we mentioned in our preview post. There might be like you may no longer be locked to a grid on your home screens where you're
interesting
when you're laying out the apps. Yeah, so you could probably potentially drop them anywhere, like you might be able to on Android. I think that's interesting. I don't know if that's necessarily going to change my life.
A messier home screen. Congratulations.
Exactly. I would love to put a widget in the middle and then like apps somewhere else, like along the sides, flanking the, I don't know. Within reach of my fingers, right? You know what I mean? Like the way it's currently built, I have to think what apps do I not want to use as often versus the ones I want to use more often. So I'll put those nearer down and to the sides.
We should do like a phone comparison screen at some point, but do you care about anything beyond the home screen, Trillin? Because like for me, page 2 and 3 and everything beyond, it's like, I don't care. I'm never going to swipe over there. I swipe down, I search for apps.
I rely on pages 1 and 2. That's it, right? I also rely on the bottom halves of the pages regardless, because I cannot for the life of me reach across, because I use a Pro Max now. So the top half for me is for widgets and the bottom half is for the apps that I use. That's why it's like page 1 and 2.
That actually works out pretty well, because then you can reach that.
Yeah,
with your
it's
thumb,
one
yeah.
swipe and tap away, as opposed to reach, drop your phone, crack the glass and then get your app, you know? So that's how I design my app. So this is interesting. This is a interesting potential new like iOS 18 thing. I don't care so much about iPadOS, even if like... You know, I
would you care if like they were like, hey, let's emulate macOS a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, I would.
To
I
give
think
you like
I think
stuff.
On a philosophical and theoretical front, yes, I care. Like functionally, no, because I don't really use iPads a lot. But yes, as a news person, I care. In the same way that, like, do I use the calculator on Apple a lot? No. But do I care if they put out a graphing calculator on a phone? Yes. And can I type 80085 on it? Yes. Like, that's all I care
about. Yeah, yes. We love typing that. The thing, like, the complaints we had last week or whenever we were talking about the iPad Pro, right, is like how limited it is. It can only do certain things. Like, only one app can access your microphone at one time. It may not be able to run a background process. I don't know if virtualizing macOS will be the thing to kind of solve that. And I almost wonder, like, doing virtualized macOS on, like, an 11-inch screen, that's not going to be really super helpful to some people.
It's not touch-friendly,
It's not super touch-friendly. I think that's something Apple has totally avoided even thinking about, whereas Microsoft, since Windows 8, has been like, we got to make these stupid windows. I got to be able to, like, put my fingers on them or something. Whereas iPad OS was just like, we never have to think about mouse and keyboards. We're just going to be fingers. Then they kind of, with the whole keyboard thing, I feel like they start to emulate surfaces after a while, and they just never talked about what they said previously about surfaces.
Yeah.
So that's funny.
I do want to point out that some of the chatter in our live stream chat has been talking about, like, what is there going to be a new name for the iPhone assistant, right? And it's some people are like Siri Pro or like Siri Plus or like, I don't know what else other than IAI. We shall
Sarai.
See. Psoriasis, yeah. Also want to say that Sir Holmes mentioned that you just search for the app from the home screen, which actually this is the other way I use the app. So, like, anything beyond
down,
page
baby.
Two, I just do the search. Yeah. And search was, I think, an Android feature first. I cannot remember. But that's how I used it before.
The iPhone search was very bad for a long time. So I think Apple did have to do some work to, like, make that better. And also now search can, like, pull up specific, like, settings.
Can I just say?
Which is kind of nice. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. I like the universal search. But here, I love how my iPhone search, right? Whenever you search something, I will find these random, like, previous searches on there or, like, suggested searches that just don't make sense. One time I saw, like, one of the previous searches cached on there was like, E-E-E-A-A-E-E. And I was like, what the heck is that? And then recently, by the way, like, right now, if I, like, scroll down on my, like, home screen, one of the recent searches is the letters P-O-R on Wikipedia. And I'm like, I never searched that, but P-O-R is what I called my grandmother.
Aren't you sure? Well, maybe it picked that up. But
maybe
no, like, drunken
me.
late night.
No, why would I search for my grandma on Wikipedia? And what
why
on earth is P-O-R
you?
If not?
I think you've made the new like horror movie, Sherlyn. The ghost.
Not horror
ghost
movie, a love story. I would love for my grandma to visit me. So.
Aw, that's nice.
Yes.
That's lovely. Anything else we want to mention? I guess in terms of macOS, like, it just seems like at this point macOS gets features that were on iOS and were on iPadOS. It seems like Apple's entire energy is focused on iPhones, a little bit less on iPads, and then Macs are just like, whatever, man. We gave you new chips. Be happy.
How about Vision Pro?
Yeah, how about Vision Pro? I'm thinking about that right now because there are a lot of things Vision Pro can't even do. Like, you can't rearrange the app icons. Vision Pro. Things just, when
funny.
You install them, they just get stacked. And I feel like Apple, it's sort of like somebody who's working on, like, a major report or something for school. And is like, oh crap, I didn't really fully format this, but nobody's going to install that many apps, right? Who cares? So I feel like Vision Pro, like, with every update we get from them, is like, spatial personas for your FaceTime avatars, that should have been there at launch. Give us an extra month. Give us an extra couple of months, okay? We really need time to do all this stuff. So I feel like Apple was just super... Vision Pro came out hot out of the gate, and it's getting criticized for a lot of things because it's not fully baked, and they're kind of baking it in real time. What would I like to see? I mean, faster performance. I think faster finger gesture stuff, too. Which may require some hardware updates, maybe not just software updates. But I did notice, like, when I was testing that What If experience on the Vision Pro, a lot of it you're doing, like, hand gestures, like Doctor Strange and, like, the people in the magicians there along with Wong. And it's just, like, really inaccurate, you know, because on the Vision Pro you're doing stuff like, okay, pinching and scrolling and zooming. It's not super, it doesn't have to be super timely. It's the latency. You can have a little bit of a lag. But when you're playing a game, you want to, like, be able to point at something and throw a fireball over here or block a shield. And it seems like things were just so wishy-washy that they were just kind of, like, making those interactions slower to make up for the fact that it's not as good as like a gamepad or something. It's not as instant. I don't feel the like visceral thing of like throwing a fireball or crafting a spell or something. So I think the actual hand recognition stuff, they got to get better at. I almost wonder like what they could do, because that thing has an M2 chip, which also has a pretty powerful neural engine. I almost wonder like what else Apple's working on to kind of take advantage of that. I believe the eye tracking and the hand tracking does like tap into that for some of the underlying stuff within Vision Pro. That's something the Oculus headsets can't do very well, because they have much less powerful chipsets. They're using Snapdragon hardware, which have their own like MPU stuff, but not, it's not the same. I think I just want more content, Trillin. I want more content, and I want this thing to get cheaper so that people can actually like start to use it. And it's still a little buggy. Like sometimes when I've been using it in the morning and I put it on in the afternoon and I have the thing over my head, I'm like, are you going to boot up?
Yeah.
Are you going to boot up?
Right.
It's not just like your phone or your computer taking time. It's like complete darkness. You have to sit there in darkness.
That's like some humane eight level BS. No, not as bad.
There's a lot of, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
So I feel like they got to iron out all these kinks, deliver a lot more content that makes it more useful. And I don't know, court more developers to it. Like, give us more of a reason. I would actually love better integration with iPhone stuff. Like, if I hold up my iPhone, give me my iPhone screen in a little window and just show it to me. Because right now, if I didn't, like, respond to something on my iPhone that is not within the Vision Pro, it's kind of annoying. Because then you have to tap in. You can't do Face ID to log in. You have to tap in the PIN code and everything. So, yeah, I'm thinking of a piece of what I'd like to see on Vision Pro. I also don't know if anybody really cares, because ultimately it's like it's a very limited device at this point, and Apple hasn't fully fully sold it to developers or professionals either. So it's, I like Vision Pro. I just think Apple has to do a lot of work there, and clearly all their attention is on the AI stuff, because that's the stuff that looks the worst for them. Do you expect any surprises at WWDC? Oh
God, who knows? I think there will be like some kind of iterative hardware upgrade to one Mac product, maybe a Mac Studio, maybe a Mac Mini, that sort of thing. Also, to your point about the Mac, the Vision Pro being expensive, like Deepro9 was saying that, let me just go take out a 10-year loan to go buy a Vision Pro. Like, wow, that is kind of what we're staring down with the price there. I do think, though, I want to invite people listening or watching the podcast, send us an email, podcast@engadget.com, with your idea of what the next version of macOS is going to be named after. Are they finally going to be like macOS Napa, macOS Wine Country, macOS Yosemite?
That we've had Yosemite.
Oh, I mean,
have we had Venice yet? Have we had Venice yet?
Maybe Castro. I don't know. Whatever. macOS Frisco. Everybody will hate it.
Nope.
Everybody. But anyway, send your guess, your best guess. It's a podcast at engadget.com.
macOS Petaluma. And everyone's going to be like, what's
macOS Los Angeles.
It's just a city. There's a lot of things. I want to briefly shout out that one surprise we could see is that we saw this report from Gurman a while ago just saying like Apple is dabbling in home robotics, home robots. And there is room like for this company that is certainly thinking hard about like home automation and home devices and stuff to be like, well, here's a, what if we turn the HomePod into a thing that is more of like a little home robot that follows you around, can sit on your kitchen counter and move the camera around almost like that, one of those Google tablets, right? The one that moves the actual tablet screen. I almost wonder, like, I think we had talked about this at the time.
Yes, but
we
did.
Like the iRobot.
Yes, exactly.
Acquisition.
We did.
Failed. And yeah, Apple still seems like a good potential if they just wanted IP and cool stuff.
I mean,
that would be a smart one.
The real only thing like that prevents, I think, Apple from truly just buying over Roomba/iRobot is the fact that they probably never want to say the word poop or dirt. You know, they just don't want to deal with the idea that life can get messy and dirt is a real thing and stink sometimes happens.
Stink sometimes happens.
Michael Timpson says something that I actually wanted to say too. Apple Car, didn't they like fire all kinds of people or something?
There's no Apple Car. Like it,
exactly.
The whole thing we talked about was like, seems like that project is at least on the back burner. They did do a lot of work for it. So I almost wonder if like, if in a couple of years, like when EV batteries are a little like cheaper and it's easier for them to like design something like that. Maybe it could be resurrected in some form, maybe a self-driving pod, but the tech wasn't there over the past decade for them to really do the car, it seemed.
Yeah. So that's probably not coming. And it will be extremely no surprising if it does. Some funny macOS names in the chat. Michael Coley says macOS Alcatraz, which I did drop last year. Michael Timson says macOS Venice Beach, which I was thinking about. And Michael Timson adds muscled software, which, okay. You know what? I think maybe Apple is going to pull a like 180 and be like macOS Manhattan.
No.
macOS Soho. Oh, macOS Rodeo Drive.
macOS Rodeo. I mean, macOS Hollywood will be full selling out if they ever do that.
Yeah, they did. I don't know. Anyway,
the hills.
lots of ideas, lots of potential
lots
there.
Lots of ideas. All right. Stay tuned, folks. Like, yeah, we will have some more WWDC coverage coming up. Stay tuned. We'll do the live blog. Sherlyn and I will be live blogging together Monday morning. And we're going to have a whole bunch of coverage over at Engadget. So, yeah.
Come support us.
Be ready. Come support us. Watch us live blog. Share what you can. And, yeah, we're going to be running around Apple's campus for 2 whole days talking with people and demoing things. So I'm excited, but also not looking forward to all the running around. That place is very large. And also, yeah, I don't know. We're going to have to write a lot, Trillin. I think it's going to involve a lot of work, too. So we're going to try to have fun while doing it, folks. And maybe we'll do a quick podcast from Apple, like as soon as they do things or as soon as we get some hands-on time with some of their demos.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, let's move on to some other news, surprise news overnight. NVIDIA has surpassed Apple as the second most valuable U.S. company. Its market cap, let me just read here. It hit a $3 trillion market cap. NVIDIA had a market value of $3.019 trillion Wednesday after, I think, right after close. Apple was at $2.99 trillion. Couldn't do a little better, Apple, to really take this on. Microsoft is currently the most valuable publicly traded company. Its market cap is $3.15 trillion as of Wednesday. So I'm not too surprised, but this is certainly an example of like when there is a gold rush, you got to sell the shovels, right? And NVIDIA is selling all of the shovels.
All the
to
AI.
Power the gold.
All
the
of
AI
the AI. Shit.
Yeah.
And that's so closely tied to our next like other news item, which is that like Apple is slipping because of its inability to like really be at the forefront there.
I do. I think we kind of pretty much mentioned like all of this story, Sherlyn. But yeah, the story is like Apple slipping because of that Google hire that they brought in. The NVIDIA thing is still wild to me, though. Like, did you 5 years ago, Sherlyn, would you think NVIDIA would be so powerful? Because, hey, we knew GPUs were important then because the crypto bros and everybody were like all over GPUs. It was being used for GPU mining. Like the crypto stuff still felt like a flash in the pan. There is some like lasting stuff there. But Microsoft being the most valuable company that's publicly traded now makes sense because they went all in on the cloud and Azure stuff. And then they started combining cloud plus AI. So their like lead is probably going to be pretty strong for a while. But NVIDIA just really lucked out because I remember 5 years ago or even earlier, like I had to report on a lot of NVIDIA AI work and they'd talk about like self-driving stuff that they were building and it looked cool, but it didn't feel real. Like this was not a product that people could actually use and it didn't feel like it actually existed in our dimension. It existed in NVIDIA's dimension.
Yeah.
And now I guess it paid out for them. Like Jensen Huang, the CEO and founder of NVIDIA is just like, must be the happiest man on earth right now.
I just want to say that I think maybe I should have seen the writing on the wall for NVIDIA's success when, and I don't know if that's the right saying, but I think when during the pandemic, they kept selling out, they were out of stock. I think partly that was because of supply chain issues, but partly I don't think I personally have been, you know, aware of demand for NVIDIA's GPUs being as high as it was during the pandemic with like what RTX 4080 series.
Yeah.
They brought ray tracing 5 years ago. Was that what they did? I don't know what it was.
Not five
right?
years but, like, ago. No, that was like 2 or 3 years ago. At this
exactly.
Point.
So like they've done so many different things mm-hmm. to bring like new capabilities to their GPUs, their graphics cards. And I think
that's
yeah,
just for gamers. And even the ray tracing thing, like I don't think has ever fully taken off.
Sure.
It's cool.
But it's one thing that improved mm-hmm. on the graphics cards the way like I think, you know, people just kept talking about.
People, yeah, like the gamers were certainly all over it. And AMD, I think, was failing to like keep up in the high-end GPU market. But then AMD is like, hey, all our hardware is in Microsoft's console and Sony's console and not Nintendo's console. But their hardware is elsewhere. So AMD was like less worried about the high-end market. But anyway, good news for NVIDIA. I don't know how long it's going to last. We should talk about this Humane thing, Sherlyn, because there have been a couple updates. And I guess I'm happy, Sherlyn, that your Humane AI pin did not go up in flames, because that is apparently what they're warning people of. They're warning that the battery case, was it the specifically
yes, the case.
Battery yep. charging case, they received a report that could catch fire, and they sent out a note to all customers that out of an abundance of caution, they're telling people to stop using it. That seems bad.
Yeah,
me.
Funny. Uh-huh. At 4 p.m. yesterday, I got this email, and I immediately was like, yo, guys, we need to, like, cover this. and our team rightly asked me to ask Humane, will they be sending out replacements or will they be refunding people? Because these cases do cost you money. And our podcast producer, Ben, did point out, you know, in the earlier part of this live stream that I am vindicated in a way. Yes, that like that thing was burning me, right? Like the pin itself,
that's
the booster
pin itself,
pack,
not just the charging case, right?
The boost, yeah. So the booster pack and it was running warm. The pin itself had the like metal edges that would feel like they were burning, like hot for me to touch. And then when they sat in the carrying case, I never had it like on me, so it's hard to tell whether it ever burned me. But the carrying case and when the pin came out of it after being in there and charging for a bit would just be warm as well. I also would like to point out that the carrying case, even with the pin inside or without, would just lose charge slowly throughout the day. Yeah. Just doesn't make sense that it wouldn't hold on to some of the juice to continue charging the pin. Anyway, it would just be dead after a while. I'm just like, why is this not charging? Oh, because the charging case itself is also dead. Basically, what Humane's email entailed was that they found like a quality issue with one of their battery vendors, and they didn't specifically say that anyone had caught on fire. There was just one report that led them to investigate. And then they then found out that there was a quality issue that may be a fire safety issue. So like, okay, cool. Glad I stopped using that thing. Glad that
If you needed another reason not to spend $700 plus a monthly fee. This garbage product. You should. Another reason not to buy it. And also, there was a New York Times piece that was like perfectly timed for this about how Humane failed. And they talked to a bunch of people working there and also the CEO and the founders too. And reportedly, they have only sold 10,000 orders. But we have talked about the fact that they are also trying to sell themselves to other companies. HP's name is up there for $1 billion. I want that life, Sherlyn. I want to like sit and build a failed product that fundamentally doesn't solve any problems, is a disaster on every level, and then be like, hey, give me a billy for this. Give me $1 billion for my failure.
I want to point out this brings me back to the conversation of we have talked about how high this valuation is in previous episodes already, but B, like when Ben said we were vindicated, I want to say that like the industry, you know, all of us tech reviewers and journalists and media and influencers, including Marquez of MKBHD, were criticized on some level, right? Like, I think MKBHD got a lot of like criticism around like, oh my gosh, you single-handedly would bring down this, how can you do that? And can you imagine,
maybe they
like,
shouldn't
had he,
suck
imagine yeah. had he not actually fairly addressed and criticized and brought up the fact that this thing runs hot or this thing is, and then here we are 1 month down the road, you know, nothing really has caught on fire yet, but like if these came to light after a row of like, you know, unfairly positive coverage, then what kind of trust would we have? What kind of credibility would we have with our audience, you know?
The only people complaining were typically like the Silicon Valley bros and startup people. But in that New York Times reporting, there are several instances of people at Humane being like, this is not ready. We have issues with how it's done. And those people were reprimanded for saying anything negative about the product of the company. And that is a sort of like, it is a cult mentality that a lot of these companies operate on. It's like, we're changing the world. We have hundreds of millions of dollars of funding. Nobody has seen this tech before. Who cares if it isn't fully baked or if it's not solving genuine problems. Wild.
I just remember, I remember during the review process where I was like, I walked into the Humane AI office in New York to take my briefing and saw, witnessed firsthand that all of the staff people there were wearing Humane AI pins and walking around the office. I'm like, how could not a single one of them have found out? And it turns out maybe they did. And maybe they were just reprimanded, you know, and that's
they literally just don't want to hear it. There's a great quote at the end of that New York Times piece, which you should all read. But Bongiorno, the CEO, says, you don't know everything before you launch. Yeah, no shit. Yeah, yeah. Maybe if you don't want to hear everything before launch. And Mr. Chowdhury, who is, he's not the CEO, but he's also one of the founders. He was the guy who did that whole TED talk, said, they definitely wish that it were able to resolve some of those things a little bit differently. Specifically, he has a line. I'm going to pull this up here. But his line is kind of hilarious because it's like, I just want to build things. That's kind of how it ends. I'm like, yeah, building things is nice.
Yeah.
Build something useful.
I will say that whenever I'm like, when I met them and in my interactions with them, Bethany Bongiorno and Imran Chowdhury, they're like this couple. They're
married. You know,
they
yeah.
seem nice, at least to me, right? And I think that I am aware that there is a privilege in terms of the relationship here that they kind of have to be nice to me, right?
And I don't care how nice they are, too. Like, it's great that they're nice. But they could be great people. They could be great people, but I'm not talking about their personalities. I'm not trying to date these people, right? It's like, is your thing good? And it wasn't. And it's sad. It's kind of sad. And also the response from the tech industry of like, why you got to be so mean, bro?
That's not nice. Yeah. That was just,
that's not
come
fun.
On. I mean,
it's pathetic. Yeah.
But what I mean is that, like, yes, they seem like nice people to me, but it's really not nice to hear that they might have reprimanded some of the people who are trying to raise alarms or trying to be like, this is not ready for selling and you should not. Like, they could have been protected from all of this. Not even protected. They could have just had a better product at launch had they listened to some of their own staff, if this report turns out to be true. So while you look for that quote.
We're done. Okay. Quote. He basically said he just wants to build. But I do want to note that New York Times piece does have apparently Chowdhury and Bongiorno had like a meeting before the launch being like, prepare for bad reviews. Like really bracing the staff for like, this is not going to go well. I wonder why, guys. Like, yeah. It almost seems like they were well aware.
I mean, they knew because the reviews, the process included them asking us what we thought. And all of us reviewers were like, we're having all these issues. What's going on? The moon in our chat says, this is a problem in the industry. Releasing products with future functionality promises is the new hotness. It can't be allowed to continue. And yeah, we again have said this like, God, episodes
this has been done
past.
Before, too. This has been done
it's
before
not humane
by other companies.
Alone. Yeah. Like, even sometimes when the Surface Duo was launched, it was like, software updates are coming to make the experience better. But buy it now, though. No, that's not going to happen.
That's not how we review things or have to score things. This all actually ties into the next thing we want to bring up, which is a story about AI workers demanding stronger whistleblower protections in an open letter. It includes, it was signed by 13 current and former workers with ties to Google, OpenAI, and Anthropic. We don't really talk about Anthropic very much, but they're also another major AI company. And specifically, they're asking for, here's a good quote from that letter. So long as there is no effective government oversight of these corporations, current and former employees are among the few people who can hold them accountable to the public. Yet broad confidentiality agreements block us from voicing our concerns, except to the very companies that may be failing to address these issues. So, end quote. This is another example of these companies, like people at these companies bringing up problems and then being reprimanded for it. And specifically, there was another story. One of the OpenAI people, what's his name? Leopold Aschenbrenner, who on the recent Dwarkesh podcast, which is the thing I've never heard about, but apparently this guy does 4-hour-long podcasts that are deeply researched. So kudos to him. But he was saying, like, he brought up, Aschenbrenner brought up issues to the OpenAI board about security and safety and how they're deploying things. And by bringing those issues up to the board, HR reprimanded him because of that, because OpenAI leadership didn't want the board to see that. And they called it a security incident, even though he's bringing up stuff that the board should know about. And also information that was publicly available, like when OpenAI said they wanted to do AGI, like a general time frame of 2027 to 2028. They were calling that confidential information. They were saying that out in public. So it just seems like they wanted to fire this guy because he told the board something that kind of ruined the rosy image that Sam Altman wanted to build for it. Like, that's what it is. that's kind of what this letter is pointing to as well. What do you think about this, Shrillin?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think the best point that someone in our chat brought up, I think it was the moon, is that it seems like there's very dark in these AI companies with lots more of these stories surfacing, right? These things about HR oversight and all of that coming up. I don't know. Like you said, it's tied into that humane situation where reportedly people, like, you know, they didn't specifically whistleblow or it wasn't about ethical type of stuff. But yeah, they're not being listened to. And I think this is a result or byproduct of hype, of like there's a hype train, everyone's jumping on board, and the train has to keep going on. And if you try to slow the train down, you're not going to be listened to, even though there might be like an obstacle in the path, there might be like some kind of dangerous issue coming up. They're not listening. And I think this is all, again, I've said this over and over again, it's all capitalism's fault.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
and people are awful.
And it's all hyper-capitalism's fault, which is like exactly what Silicon Valley is all about. It's all about like, we gotta build this thing that will get a ton of VC funding, and we sell out. We cash out for at least $1 billion, and then we will be successful. Kind of
that's
a pain.
That's just wild to me. I'm just so wild. Disappointed in humanity.
And this is how we're entering WWDC, by the way, where Apple is partnering with this company, which is kind of shady. It almost seems like they're making a deal with the devil just to be so people will stop yelling at them about being behind on generative AI stuff. This is going to be an interesting WWDC to see how much Apple leans in on OpenAI and how much they want to do their own thing. All this is connected. It's all we've been saying, right? Like, I think a lot of these companies can't be trusted. I don't trust like how they're handling information, like how they're pulling things in or how they're thinking about security. Clearly, their employees think the same thing. That's something to think about the next time you use ChatGPT or any of these services. Yeah. Some quick updates. We did see that Boeing's Starliner has finally lifted off and it's headed to the ISS. The latest update I saw is like it is on track. They were dealing with like maybe some sort of helium leak. So I'm hoping that's not going to be anything major. Hoping they board and are able to return safely. But good on Boeing, because it seemed like they were having trouble with just planes recently.
Yeah,
I was on one of those Alaska airline planes. I was looking at it, I was like, wait a minute. 747 Max. That's not good. Alaska
How big were your
Airlines.
Windows really is the thing, right? Like,
yeah. Boeing has seemed like it's been in trouble. The Starliner launch has been scrubbed several times because of weather and other difficulties. So it's cool. They launched. They're headed to the ISS. I'm hoping that all goes well. In other news, we're also prepping for the Summer Game Fest 2024, yes! Which is also happening this weekend. Stuff happening. All at once. Summer Game Fest Live is June 7th at 5 p.m. Eastern. I hate you so much, Jeff Keighley. 5 p.m. Eastern on a Friday?
Is it Eastern? Okay. I thought it was specific 5 p.m. But
No, it's Eastern. We all like yelled at him for that. There's Day of the Devs after that, which is more like developer oriented. Devolver has their thing also on June 7th. Xbox is June 9th. Ubisoft Forward is June 10th. We'll be doing all this coverage.
By the way, June 10th is WWDC. Just FYI.
Yeah. That's great. We're not dying over here. We don't know when Nintendo's going to do their thing. We haven't talked about Sony's PlayStation unveiling event that was last week. It was not very momentous from what I saw. We did a lot of coverage. Go check that out in Gadget, but there was nothing that really jumped out at me. Kind of a weird thing. This is basically the sort of E3 season. E3 is not happening, but all these companies are getting together and having major game announcements. So we'll see.
Well, come back to Engadget.com for all of the updates. Our team, we have people on the scene, and we are also covering it remotely. Basically, quite a lot of people will be writing stories. So come check it out.
And let's do something a little different, folks. We want to show off something that we did last week where we actually took advantage of AI. I've been using the online tool Descript quite a bit for some like podcast editing while on the go, just to make life easier. That's how I got that build interview out. And Descript has like a lot of automated tools that can just clean up your audio, give you studio-like sound. We had a problem last week where my co-host, Nathan Ingram, joined while at Jackhammer was right outside his window, just the entire time.
But let's be like more accurate here.
Yes.
he knew that street construction was happening on his street, and we were all hoping and praying that it would not occur during when we were recording.
This is podcast producer
How
Ben
stupid
speaking,
were
by the way.
We, though? Yeah. Yes. How stupid were we, though? Because how can we just expect construction workers to burn daylight?
They're not going to. We were hoping that it just wasn't going to be that bad. It turned out to be pretty not great during the live stream. You could go back and take a look at that. And we're like, okay, what can we do to salvage this? Also, Nate muted as much as he could. It was just that it was a thing that was really constant whenever he was talking. And we thought like his audio may have been unsalvageable. Ben, podcast producer extraordinaire, did a couple tweaks of his own to trying to like clean up the audio. And I spent 10 minutes just, I dumped it into audio, into Descript's like audio cleanup stuff. I think I ran the compressor on it, which kind of tightened it up a little. I will say, like, the Descript tool, it came out. What ended up happening is, like, almost magical coming out of Descript. But let's play the original audio. We're going to play a little game over here, and we're going to see how this works. This is the original audio, as we heard it from Nate.
But nonetheless, everybody communicates, everybody sends emails, everybody has thoughts in their head, and you put them down, and it sounds like you, usually, at the very least. Whereas when you AI it, it doesn't sound like anyone.
That's bad.
Not good.
Pretty bad. You know, it didn't sound as bad when on the stream, but I also think the stream may have like quieted some of that. So we have three different versions of what Ben did to fix this, okay? Here's version A.
But nonetheless, everybody communicates, everybody sends emails, everybody has thoughts in their head, and you put them down, and it sounds like you, usually, at the very least. Whereas when you AI it, it doesn't sound like anyone.
A little better? A little cleaner?
Yeah, that's not bad at all. Pretty good. Version A is what I use to clean up all audio that comes into the podcast. That's Isotope, and I think I used the spectral denoise feature. This is not AI. This is just using, like, trying to figure out where, like, background noise might be in the whole spectrum of the Hertz values. But the problem is that when you run that, there must be something about a jackhammer that sits in the same, band that the human voice is in. So it took a little bit out of Nate's voice. So why don't we try version B?
B, let's go.
But nonetheless, everybody communicates, everybody sends emails, everybody has thoughts in their head, and you put them down, and it sounds like you, usually, at the very least. Whereas when you AI it, it doesn't sound like anyone.
That's really good.
So, yeah, this one sounds a little bit better. This one is from Supertone Clear, which is a new plugin that a lot of radio folks I know have used more as a de-reverb than anything. Because, like, Isotope is one of the industry standard things that you find a lot of podcast engineers using. But Isotope D-Reverb is not that great, to be quite honest. So when Clear came out, everybody was, like, really, really excited. Everybody was jumping on the beta. I'm really happy that I got beta pricing on this. But you can still tell that there's a jackhammer in the background.
Yep.
So let's listen to the last version.
Here's the last version, folks.
But nonetheless, everybody communicates, everybody sends emails, everybody has thoughts in their head, and you put them down, and it sounds like you, usually, at the very least. Whereas when you AI it, it doesn't sound like anyone.
What happened?
That's the version that ran on the podcast. I felt like I had to explain, like, hey, Nate is going to sound like a little bit weird, a little bit robotic, but it's entirely him, and that is the Descript cleanup.
That's really
that
good.
Is Descript.
That's crazy. It's not
cleanup,
just really good for
it.
It
is
not insane.
No.
It's
all I'm gonna say is this.
It's just gone.
All I'm gonna say is this, Ben. What you're telling me is I can now record my podcast right next to a jackhammer and be okay.
It'll be totally
fine.
We're
going to do all our recordings from the show floor from now on.
If you feel the need to have a hairdryer going on you constantly, you can still record a podcast.
Please don't do that.
We should have just
stopped Nate. Like when we heard like, hey, maybe there's outside construction. Should have just been like, no, thanks, Nate. It's okay. We'll just go. But we were brave. We thought it may get better. This Descript tool took me. I dumped the audio in. I hit the studio effects button. I did I didn't put the compressor on, but I did the thing where you limited low pass noise. So high pass filter?
High pass lets high pass through. Yes. Low pass lets low pass through.
But then people also call it like low pass cutoff, which is different. It's a different thing. The cutoffs are different. Anyway, I did those two things. It took 10 minutes and I delivered this audio to Ben and I think Ben almost fainted.
I was really surprised. I was also really relieved because most of the show was just Devendra and Nate talking. And so this pretty distinctly proves that AI noise reduction is a path forward. Like, this is something that is genuinely useful for music producers, audio engineers, people who work in radio. You just have to get used to the weird robotic sound. And when we were talking about the weird robotic sound, we were also talking about Showrunner AI, right, Dev? Tell us more about that.
I mean, Showrunner AI is kind of part of this, too. This was a thing that launched last week. I didn't have a chance to write it up, but Showrunner AI, they got a lot of buzz because they were like, hey, you could type in a prompt, an AI prompt, and produce a TV show. And you could produce something that looks like South Park or something. And it just all kind of reminds me of this in a way. Like, I don't think that product is very good. I think it got a lot of flack for this too. But it just reminded me of it because it's like, hey, I think this cleanup tool is a really good, useful form of AI. And by AI, it is doing a low-level process to basically take away every little bit of that jackhammering, which is possible by a human, but would probably drive you insane because it's doing a lot of like repetitive low-level work. And that is the sort of thing AIs are good at. Whereas Showrunner is trying to sell you, hey, let's build a whole TV show around this thing, like with no work or anything. There are a couple examples out there. And that is the sort of AI stuff where I'm like, it's not funny. I was actually talking to the CEO of this company too. Like, I heard the demos, I got the pitch. I was like, dude, this is not funny. This is not good content. People will rag on you for even producing this. And I got some feedback that was like, yes, I have been thinking about this too. They still went ahead and launched the thing. And to me, that seems like a failure of like how we think of AI. Whereas, hey, just giving actual artists the tools to make their art better, or to do their things more easily, is a better function of these tools rather than just do the art, right?
Well, yeah, and I want to shout out a comment from our live stream that says, sell your shares in high-end microphone companies. AI is about to put them out of business. That's not true.
Not true.
What's going to end up happening is that the high-end microphone companies are going to end up selling you the same microphones and then maybe a little piece of software that either runs inside the microphone itself or that you can use as post-processing that makes your directional mics sound even more directional.
They're kind of already doing that. Like, there's already a lot of mics with processing built in. They're not using AI or NPU stuff yet, but yeah. But certainly the door is open for that. I also want to point out, folks, like, I used this Descript tool when I did the Pavin interview with Microsoft. I did that build. I did that with the iPhone Voice Memo, you know, app. So using my iPhone's mics, and it was like, I can hear like how it's not great, but that the Descript tool did a good job of making it feel more listenable. So I think that's kind of cool. Anyway, we just want to shout out these examples. Because,
and I also want to point out that we are not doing an ad for Descript.
We're not doing an ad for Descript.
Yeah, no, we are absolutely like not doing an ad for Descript or AI, period. We're just saying like, hey, here are some tools that actually are useful.
Because I think there is a lot of knee-jerk reaction right now, and certainly earned among artists and other creators. It was like, hey, all AI bad. You know, anything people talk about, especially generative AI, mostly bad. And I tend to agree. But also, we have to consider like that these tools exist and how they can also make our lives a little better. Just putting that out there. Let's move on to what we're working on. Hey, WWDC prep. Anything else, Sherlyn, from your side?
I mean, as we speak, I am working through an edit, so that's great. check out if people on the live stream see my laptop wobbling, is because I'm typing. General WWDC prep, like you said, but also lots of behind the scenes team planning type things and hoping to get Engadget better and better. And let us know what you think of all the products that we have, like the podcast, the live stream, the website, what you would like to see, newsletters, columns. Send me your
Very
thoughts.
Cool. Very cool. I'm gonna talk about my pop culture pick of the week then.
Yes.
We finish up this edit, Trillin. But I want to shout out The Acolyte, which is the new Star Wars show. I reviewed it on the site, and it is freaking fantastic, folks. And I'm happy to report that, because I've suffered through pretty much all the Star Wars shows. Like, I've watched them all. I watched The Book of Boba Fett, which nobody did. I don't know why I watched The Book of Boba Fett. I watched the Obi-Wan show, which is kind of cool to see Ewan McGregor back in the role and Hayden Christensen, like, back as Anakin, too, like, in certain respects. Like, it was cool to see that. There was actually a pretty cool Vader fight in that. But it wasn't interesting or additive. It didn't really, like, do much with Star Wars. Whereas The Acolyte, I won't say much about the plot of it, but it is essentially Star Wars doing Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon meets so many other things. And in fact, I love, like, every time the show calls it out too. It opens with a fight scene, a lone warrior stepping into, like, a bar or a tea house, seeking out the strongest warrior there, who's a Jedi master played by Carrie Ann Moss, Trinity herself. And she's a Jedi master. The warrior is just, like, presents herself. It's like, let's fight. I have to kill you. And at some point, Carrie Ann Moss says, "Who trained you?" And I'm like, that just gives me chills, because that is like the Michelle Yeoh conversation with Zhang Ziyi, or I think even Chow Yun-Fett said that. But it's sort of like, who are you? Where do you come from? The choreography is so good. Like, the action is the best I've ever seen in Star Wars. So just want to shout that out. But also, this is, I think, 100 years before the time of the original trilogy. I think that's the High Republic time. I don't know, like, what the actual timeline is. But there are no Skywalkers. There are no characters you've ever seen before. It's just like a new story set in the Star Wars universe with people who have lightsabers and they have force powers. And I think this is the first Wookiee we see. There's a Wookiee Jedi Master, slight spoiler, but he's in the trailer. Cool stuff. Just really well done, well written. I like the characters. It stars Imanla Stenberg, who has been, she's been in a lot of things I like, actually. But she has to do, or they have to do, a lot of, like, great action and great choreography. Especially, like, there's not a ton of fight scenes in the show, but the ones that are there that count. Also co-stars Mr. Lee Jung-jae from Squid Games, also as a Jedi Master, also essentially doing Chow Yun-Fat in Crouching Tiger. Like, there's a point where, like, the attacker is, like, fighting him, and he is, like, effortlessly, like, just not even pulling his lightsaber, not even doing much, just, like, being chill about it. It is sort of a murder mystery. It is sort of like a character study too, an interrogation of, like, how the Jedi are sort of like force gatekeepers. Like, maybe they're not great. Maybe they're just like space cops who keep the force to themselves and uphold power. And maybe there are other people who should have access to these things. Like, it is doing really interesting things within the Star Wars universe. I dig it. Daphne Keene is also in this. Manny Jacinto, Charlie Barnett, who was also in Russian Doll. The show was co-created by Leslie Handlin, who co-created Russian Doll, and I love everything she does, basically. But yeah, to see Charlie Barnett, who plays just kind of like a nerdy guy in Russian Doll, be like cool, badass Jedi Master. He's kind of a prick. He's kind of like a really uptight Jedi. He's like, you gotta follow the rules. He's gonna rat out everybody. But also, he's a powerful dude, and he's strong, and he looks cool. I think that's all kind of fun. So, Sherlyn, I think you will have a lot to enjoy from this show. It is good. It's good so far. The first two episodes are up. I've seen the first four episodes, and it is fantastic. Anything you want to shout out, Sherlyn?
I saw Furiosa, actually, a couple weeks
ago. Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I think it was I was very sucked into the story from the very beginning, but, like, I was watching it with my boyfriend, and he was like, the CGI is, like, atrocious. I was like, I didn't really notice.
No.
Maybe?
I mean,
I don't know.
It's stylized, and I see people doing those complaints too. I have seen bad CGI. Like, we've lived through Quantum Mania and
exactly.
so much of the MCU stuff. Yeah.
So that I was just like, whatever. But so Furiosa was good. So seconding your kind of recommendation on that. And then I went back and watched the Charlize Theron version of Fury Road. And then, like, something fresh that we haven't, I think, hopefully haven't mentioned on the podcast yet, but we've been around for a long time, so I don't know now. But this last weekend, I watched The Trip to Spain. It stars Steve Coogan, Rob Brydon. This is, like, the third installment in their sort of The Trip series of movies.
You just miss MC, you miss Mobile World Congress, Sherlyn. Like, you're like, I want to take a trip to Spain.
And all, I mean, like they I don't think they so they don't go to Catalonia, but they go to Barcelona at some point. And they, I mean, it's like a, basically a story set within this journey to like Spain. And so they hit a lot of the scenes are of eating this beautiful looking food. They have such gorgeous B-roll of the preparation in the kitchen and then the eating of the food. And then they go visit like, you know, historical and culturally significant places and just a sort of a smorgasbord, if you will, of like food, culture, tourism, story, comedy, because, you know, every time they're sitting down eating a meal, Coogan and Brydon are like doing impressions of, this time around, they did a lot of impressions of Mick Jagger, for example. They did Michael Caine, one of the older ones.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah, so if you're ready for, you know, travel porn, basically, but with comedy and some sort of story in it, I think that's a good one to watch. Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter or Blue Sky or Mastodon, all over the place, and at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me the actual locations of where they shot the trip to Spain or any of those nice food recommendations in Spain for if I ever go again, you can send them to me on Twitter, I guess. I am at Sherlyn Lowe there, or on Threads, I am at Sherlyn Instagram. You can always email me also, cher@engadget.com works. Email us your thoughts about the show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.
Here's my interview with Justin Samuels. He founded RenderATL because he wanted to have a more inclusive developer conference that's very different than other conferences around the world, and certainly those in Silicon Valley. Render takes place in Atlanta from June 12th to 14th, and I plan to be there to check out some of the events, and here's Justin. Justin Samuels, thank you so much for joining us in the Engadget podcast.
I appreciate y'all for having me.
Happy to have you, and I'm just wondering, can you tell us a bit about who you are and what you're doing with RenderATL?
Yeah, so my name is Justin. I am the founder and CEO of RenderATL Tech Conference, and that is my Batman job, as I call it. By a day, I am a senior engineer at Intuit.
What is RenderATL? You know, it's I've seen many tech conferences. I'm out of New York too, so we have a lot over there. What makes Render different than you know, what we're seeing in Silicon Valley and New York and elsewhere?
So when people ask me, is the conference a tech conference, I always say no. It's actually a continuing education conference for technology professionals. Our goal is to be the premier place that people can come, learn, grow, and advance their skills and also their network too. And if you're in the field of technology, get that from other enthusiasts that are actually practicing in their field. The thing that makes us unique is that we are doing it here in the Silicon South, here in ATL. And we do it from a very diverse lens where we aren't just catering to one particular demographic, whether it's like Black people, whether it's Asian people, whether it's even white people. What we cater to is people from all colors, all creeds, all nationalities, because we understand that people have other perspectives that everybody can learn from.
Gotcha. I mean, I'm down here. I'm outside of Atlanta. I'm in Peachtree Corners. But since I moved here, it is fascinating to see, like, there is a lot of tech stuff happening in Atlanta. The the MailChimp acquisition happened while I was down here. I think that was the first unicorn acquisition. Kind of a big deal. And I also see, like, Microsoft has a big presence here and everyone else does too. What do you think makes, you know, Atlanta as a tech center a little different than elsewhere? Because this is something I noticed in New York too. I stayed in New York for a while, and people kept trying to get me to come to San Francisco and Silicon Valley. And every time I visit there, I'm like, it's cool. I don't like the way you all think exactly the same. And that's kind of a difference when you're in New York or outside of the Valley, right?
Right. And that brings me to the genesis of the conference. Was I was constantly going across the country to go to tech conferences to help me learn and help me grow. And I came to the revelation one day that if ATL has the busiest airport in the whole globe, we could compete just as good, if not better, here. And we could do it from a lens where everybody here really believes that we are the next cultural melting pot of the entire country. Culture begins here. Whether you look at Outkast or you look at the funkiness that MailChimp brings in the tech world, everybody that begins a company here brings that particular cultural edge to their company, whether it's in a tech or it's in any other space at all. The thing about ATL, though, is that we all understand that it is a group project. Everybody here wants to help advance ATL forward and advance the region forward. And we share those commonalities where it allows us to then bounce ideas and bounce failures and successes off of each other to help propel the entire region forward.
Can you talk about, like, I don't know how long you were at MailChimp, but MailChimp seems like a really interesting example of a tech company, because you guys were out here doing kind of cool stuff for around like mail distribution, email distribution, and then all of a sudden newsletters got hot again, like in the past like 5 years, but you guys were kind of in it for a while. What made MailChimp different, do you think, than other startups? And maybe what was specific about Atlanta area stuff that kind of like guided MailChimp?
Man, so I don't publicly talk about it much, but I was a part of the acquisition. I was a part of like one of the employees there when the company got acquired. And it's been a great ride. And the thing that made us really unique was that we came from a culture of hustlers and a culture of we will get the job done for the betterment of our clients. That we really believed in a medium and small size businesses, and that we really held them near and dear to our heart. The thing that made us also unique was that we didn't mind getting our hands dirty as a company. Meaning we always took a field trip, so we always engaged locally, hands-on, head-on, not just a person coming from the corporate office. It would be like me as an engineer, or it would be a person from like the marketing team or from tech help would go out and meet the client where they are at to help make our products better. I don't think you get that out of Silicon Valley or out of the like Northeast where our traditional tech hubs are at. People here have that Southern flair and that Southern hospitality of we want to meet you where you are at, and we also want to do it to help you be the best that you could be. And that was radiated at a company like MailChimp, even when we were acquired too. It continues on now.
Gotcha, gotcha. I mean, I also think people kind of forget this. Like CES used to be in Atlanta, or there were some CES events in Atlanta. E3 had, you know, expos in Atlanta too, like once upon a time. So it's not like this is all new for Atlanta too. Like when I moved here, I live near Norcross, and I learned at some point that the inventor of the Hayes modem,
yes,
it was based in Norcross. Like that whole piece of history, I don't think is ever really told. And that is the, you know, the beginning of home internet, you know, that technology.
It's not to cut you off, but I got an even crazier like one. AWS actually began here, was a smaller company, a black owned company. The guy that actually invented it, a black man, came to the conference in the past. And he was telling me about how in the early days in like 2002, 2003, Bezos came to the office here and was like, this is going to be the future. How can we work together to also make that happen? And that isn't a thing that is told much or if is even known at all. I truly think that everybody thinks Amazon woke up one day and said, okay, we're going to go into make the web happen. It's like, no, they acquired this company, this small company here. It was OTP outside the perimeter here. And I forget the name, but it is a article on it. And I was like, yeah. And And I tell people, these are the type of stories that I'm trying to help highlight here, that ATL makes tech happen. The entire region does. We just haven't had an opportunity like a render come to help glorify it, help amplify it.
I just talked to the founder of MoviePass, and the real founder of MoviePass, and that's a whole story of, like, you know, I've talked to that guy, Stacy Spikes, since 2012, like, since he's been, like, pushing that. He's a Black founder. You don't really see that too often in the startup world. And then MoviePass, he was kicked out as CEO. You know, MoviePass went over to two basically white leaders who drove it into the ground, like, hyped it up and drove it into the ground. And that was such a sad story. There's a documentary that's on HBO now about it. But to me, that seems like too often the story of tech in America is, like, the ideas are co-opted and either the original founders are forgotten or the idea is driven into the ground because you lose the founders. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think you could even like view that with what's happening at Instacart. Like, Instacart began out great, a founder-led company. And then one day they came and said, hey, you were great. You need to go now. And the company has been teetering and tottering ever since then. It's a tragedy when the founder gets ousted like that, because they are the whole entire, like, reason, including their team, of course, why the company is even a verb now.
Gotcha. Can you tell us more about Render ATL and just, I guess, the sort of conversation you guys are having? I know the event is in a couple of weeks. I'm hoping to, like, stop by and check it out. But I've been to many conferences, and I feel like I've been to so many, I'm like, they're mostly a snooze, right? People are having panels, and it's just kind of the same people talking to each other about, like, the hype topics of the day. It's probably going to be AI at most conferences now. Yeah. But how are you guys trying to, like, be different in terms of who you're presenting, what you're talking about?
So we do not do anything at the surface level. Let's just be clear about that. Anybody that comes and speaks at our conference, they are a true practitioner, meaning they're an engineer, or they're on the design team, or they're on the, like, a product management team. They are going to give you the real on what is happening in AI or in engineering or in design. We have a total of four tracks: engineering, design, management, and also the AI track this year. And I'm using air quotes over here, because the AI, it doesn't mean artificial intelligence. It actually means accessibility and innovation.
Oh, that's cool.
And our goal is that you could find a track that you could just lean on, but also find a track that you might be interested in learning more about a topic that you would like to go deeper in. Like, I, as an engineer, I'm going to say, oh, I'm going to be on the engineering track, but I, like, really want to be a better manager one day. I'm going to hop over there. And we also give you the opportunity to connect with these speakers, too, in a intimate setting afterwards, so that you can get your questions answered. And all of the people that are coming for the expo hall are expo hall exhibitors. They come with a dedicated headcount, making sure that they can make hires, like our title partner, Zillow. They are coming in a huge way because they view ATL as the next wealth economic opportunity, where Zillow's whole goal is to drive a more economic impact through closing the home ownership gap. And they are like, we're coming to your conference to do that twofold. We are going to make hires. And on top of that, we are also going to educate people on how they could be more involved in the home ownership process to create more wealth. But beyond that, too, we also offer your evening events, like your networking events, all the parties, all the glitz, all the glamour. And at the end of the week, we have an entire concert, which is headlined by DJ Pee-wee, a.k.a. Anderson .Paak. So there's a ton happening everywhere all throughout the entire week, which is also during ATL Tech Week, too.
Gotcha. I'm wondering, too, like, you know, Atlanta is basically like blowing up because of movies and Hollywood stuff too. Like all the Marvel stuff is down here. I tell people, you know, the headquarters of the Avengers is actually it's a Porsche dealership. You know, that's all it is. But it's a cool looking building. You can go there and rent a Porsche. It's a cool thing. But do you think too much success is at all a problem for like the soul of Atlanta or like what the city kind of represents?
I don't think too much success is a problem. I think we need to be more highlighted here. I feel like we have a true brain drain problem where people recognize we are talented, recognize that the South is a place you could come make movies, is this place that you could come find cool tech, is a place that you could find opportunity. But they don't reinvest here. They always take it out. They always pluck it away. And instead of that happening, if we're able to highlight our, you know, wins, i.e. a MailChimp getting acquired for $12.5 billion, it gives other people hope that I could also do that here. I could also build things that are going to be wildly successful here. So I don't think that too much success is going to be a burden. I think it's going to be the a fuel or the igniter that we need to like really carve out what the next a future is for the entire region as a whole.
Gotcha. I mean, yeah, I would love to see like things blow up more down here. Certainly people paying more attention to, I guess, everything, because it's not just tech, right? It's innovation, it's ideas, but it's art and music and stuff too. Like there's so much happening down here. And I feel like, yeah, it never really got the respect. People will, you know, they love Outkast, they love Donald Glover, and they love the show. But I think as a region, like, yeah, it's stuff that's exported out. And it doesn't feel like people really pay attention to like what's happening on the ground, I guess.
Well, yeah. And it's like the saying, one of my good friends here, Bam Joyner, he owns a brand called Atlanta and Influences Everything. And he always talks about how our number one export is culture. We export the hell out of our culture so that everybody can take a play on it. And nobody pours back in. We don't import it, which is a great thing. We just turn to, okay, cool, we're going to now create more. We need to also begin to highlight and put a spotlight on those that are also building the culture here too, so they could continue to amplify and build more.
Gotcha. I almost wonder if like the idea of like the region of Atlanta should be just because it's a metro area, right? Like I'm not in Atlanta, but I'm 20 minutes away. There is a huge population of immigrants and also people coming in with their own technical skills and everything. I almost wonder if we can like broaden the idea and bring that all into Atlanta, you know, proper. That would help to enrich the city. That's the sort of like importing stuff back in, because man, I used to live in New York, right? And I'm getting a lot of better like Asian restaurants, Asian food down here than I was up there.
Yeah, it's crazy you say that. I just got back from Singapore, and when I was over there, all of the food was amazing. And I said, I gotta now replicate this here. And it has been hard to replicate that here in Atlanta.
You go to Food Terminal is the thing. Food Terminal is a Malaysian restaurant, and it's very, very similar. If you want the Hainanese like chicken rice, which is my favorite thing in the world, like you go to Food Terminal, and that's all over. It's in Atlanta. It's out here on the suburb side. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you know what, Justin? Thank you so much for chatting with us. And yeah, hope to see you at Render, okay?
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. It's gonna be an awesome time.
Let's say it together on the count of three. One, two, three. Calculator.